fire, there are several examples across different cities. Yes. Great. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Good to be here. Good to see all of you. My name is Jadeen Chow. I'm Chief of Safety and Security for Chicago Public Schools. Before I start the presentation, I'd like to tell people a little bit about sort of where I'm coming from and where our safety plan is coming from at Chicago Public Schools. We are the third largest school district in the country. LA is a little bit bigger than us. New York, of course, is bigger than us. When I started with Chicago Public Schools as Chief of Safety and Security, everyone raised some eyebrows. And the reason for that was because I have no law enforcement background. Chief of Safety and Security for the third largest school district has no law enforcement and no interest in law enforcement background, by the way. But that's not a knock to law enforcement. It's just that we see it a little bit differently when it comes to safety and security for schools, for children. So when I arrived at CPS, my first meeting was my team, and they said to me, we're going to present you all the statistics so you can see where we're coming from. In the first meeting, they said, great news, Chief Chow, we arrested 30 children this week, and everybody just went like that. And I'm looking at them like, what? I says, why are we applauding that? I says, why is that a good thing? It's like, it's a great thing, because we took 30 children out of the classroom who didn't really want to be there. Because if they wanted to be there, they wouldn't have misbehaved like that. And I said, well, time out. I said, so if our mission is to educate children and that whole thing about commitment and connection to the schools, something broke down, and that is, it didn't need to get to that far. So everything you're going to hear me talk about today is related to that mindset that we are here to take care of our children, that we are here to keep them in school. Because I strongly believe, and I know everyone in this room, I hope everyone in this room agrees, when our children are in school, when they can have their education that they're entitled to, they can have bright futures and be safe, and that's really, again, what we're here to talk about. Page down. There we go. So I'm going to spend a moment on education. So we're going to talk about suspensions really quickly. Again, our mindset is not about just discipline. So in case you don't know, the impact of suspending children, John Hopkins did a study a few years ago. It's still relevant. When you suspend a child, the chances of them dropping out double from their first suspension. 49% of students who enter high school with at least three suspensions on the record eventually dropped out of school. And what happens when you drop out, it just makes it so much harder. Most students who get suspended will get suspended at least one more time. And again, and Sheila's reference is a little bit, demographic disparities in disciplinary incidents further widen any academic achievement gaps. So what we're trying to do at CPS, and actually most school districts around the country, are trying to address that disparity and also make sure, if we can, if we're doing everything possible, to eliminate that school-to-prison pipeline. So our key philosophy is prevention is 98% of the cure. If we can get in front of it, we are going to hit it so that it doesn't even happen in the first place. But if you can't, if not prevention, then intervention, because it's never too late, and we are never, ever going to write off a child. We don't write off adults either, but we especially don't write off children. And along the themes of the subject today, we truly believe this. We are most successful when we are collaborating with others. So today I wanted to give you a few examples of some of the initiatives that we've been doing at CPS. We call it our holistic approach to safety. Again, safety is not about discipline. Safety is not about enforcement. It's about what do we do to make sure a child is physically and emotionally safe. And so when I first started with CPS, first thing we did, Sheila talked about surveys and so forth. We believe it's very important to get the input from those who are our stakeholders. So the first thing we did was we brought in the voices of CPS students. So we partnered with students and school administration around the city. We interviewed over 100 students in over four to six high schools, and we got their perspectives. We asked students, how do you feel about safety? How do you feel about your security officers in the school? And we use that information to formulate training curriculum. You would expect teenagers, and again, I was a teenager a long time ago, to say, all your security officers stink, all of them need to be fired. No, they were extremely constructive. They said, build relationships with us. They said, treat us like people, don't treat us like we're criminals. Work with us and de-escalate us. So we used that, it was so valuable, we actually created a video and we use that in our CPS security training program, made the security, a big brawny security officers cry because they're like, oh my gosh, I know that kid. I had no idea that's what how we made that child feel. So this is the next step of that, which was the CPS security officer training. Our key partners here were SEIU Local 73, which is the union that all of our security officers work with. They co-developed the training with us. We also work with a group called COFI, Community Organizing and Family Issues, which is the Chicago community-based organization that consists of parents. We love their perspective because children come home at night and tell them how they feel, and so they had really good input. Youth Guidance is a not-for-profit organization that helps us develop the curriculum. And so we did mandatory training for over 1,000 security officers, developed accountability standards. I'll tell you, 25% of the security officers did not make it. What I mean by that is they wouldn't drink the Kool-Aid, okay? And so as a result of that, sorry, if you're not going to subscribe to this, we have to, it's just not a good fit. We have to do what we have to do. And that was fine. The union understood, the workers understand, they can go do, I'm not sure, whatever, but something that, you know, is not in line with what we're trying to achieve here. Okay. Students administration have expressed a significant improvement in security officer performance. We're actually putting together just some tabulated results. I can tell you qualitatively, we've done a lot of focus groups with the children post this improvement. And year over year, the students see the difference and they appreciate it. In Chicago, we're so myopic. We think the whole world is about CPS Safe Passage because everyone talks about it here in Chicago. No one else outside the city probably has heard of it. We have, as Mighty said, thousands and thousands of children going to school. They're going through all sorts of neighborhoods. They're passing vacant lots, shots being fired as they're walking to school. The mayor of our city, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, has dedicated millions of dollars to support us to have this program. And so our key partners in this are CPD, Department of Transportation, you know, the Office of Emergency Management, which is our 911 group, Streets and Sand, buildings, parents, community-based organizations. I mean, this collaboration is something that we're really proud of because it takes all of these departments and people to make sure our children can travel to and from school safely. What we do is we hire community-based organizations to hire community members who then stand post. You can see an example of one of the workers up there. And they actually say, you know, build relationships with the kids, give kids the confidence to go to and from school safely. We're happy to say that as a result, year over year, we see a reduction of 25% along the routes of the safe passage routes. Revised student code of conduct. Sometimes I start with this in my presentation. Student code of conduct is the discipline code by which we actually work on misconducts, misbehaviors. So if you do something that's out of line with the student code of conduct, there's going to be consequences. What we try to say is those consequences don't necessarily need to be punitive. Those consequences can be instructional. What a concept, right? And so let's bring in, again, key stakeholders. There's those parents again. We had COFI involved, other parents in every single community. We're welcome to come in and give us feedback. Community-based organizations, from those of you who are in this business, you may have heard of this wonderful organization named Project NIA. Mariam Kaba is a good colleague of ours who helps us design what is the appropriate discipline. And student-based organizations like Voice. Yes, we brought the students in again to help us give the feedback. And again, very constructive. You know, people want to be held accountable. Just do it in a way that makes it appropriate to the misconduct. So as a result of this, we're really proud of these results. Year from when we first started, we've seen a 61% reduction in out-of-school suspensions and a 69% reduction in referrals to expulsions. Restorative justice, I'm not sure if most people in this room have heard of it, probably, but just in case not, restorative justice is it's like a philosophy, it's not a program. Essentially, what we say is let's use restorative approaches where we're looking at more instructional consequences as opposed to punitive. And so things like peace circles. So if we have two children who have a conflict, we're not going to just suspend them and say, go home and cool off. That doesn't usually work. We're going to put them together. We're going to get to the root of the issue. And we use this for adults, too, by the way. We talk about staff. You have two teachers in a peace circle. It's very effective. You know. And so these are the kind of things that we're trying to do. I'm old school. I'm old. We called this talking it out when I was growing up, but now it's official. We actually have people who are trained to do this in every school. gang school safety team. In most urban districts around the country, we have gangs, and this is not just Chicago. We have our key partners. We have Chicago Police Department, Cook County Probation. We provide supportive interventions. And so I walked in this morning, and I told my co-panelists this morning, I was a little bit discombobulated because I woke up this morning. I wake up every morning very early, and we have a death threat against one of our students from an unknown source. We have a protocol in place that addresses this, where we mobilize the partners. We have a mental health component that actually reports into me. We mobilize all these people before 6:30 so that if this threat is real, we can address it before it hits the school. We usually means identifying who the threat is. When it's anonymous, let me tell you, in this country, nothing's anonymous anymore, everybody. So when you're on Facebook and all that, if it's open source, it's very easy to find. Even if it's not open source, if there's an imminent threat risk, it is something that is solvable. Let me just say it like that. So long story short, our team identified the source of the threat. We're able to go to the child's house. In this case, it was gang-related. I don't have the outcome of what happened with that intervention, but our point is to get the child help. The person who made the threat is typically someone that's calling out for help. And 2 weeks ago, we had somebody who actually, we found the gun. When we went to the house, the parents, you know, consented to a search. My team is there as schools where there was CPD, Chicago Police, and we do a consent search, not to arrest that kid and say, you're in trouble now, Buster. It's clearly we need to get to the root of why you did this and what do we need to do, and typically means hospitalization. So a lot of the things that you're seeing around the country, you know, Sandy Hook type situations, these are all, to an extent, preventable. It just means you have to go out there and find them before they happen. With the gang stuff, it's the same thing. I don't know how many of you, just go on Facebook tonight and just search any kid. I mean, they're open source. They want people to see this. You'll see children shorter than me with guns, like huge guns, and these are not fake guns out there. Our goal is to make sure we understand why the child is doing that and what we need to do to get in front of it so they don't shoot anybody. Because then everyone, you know, both sides are affected. So we do have shootings. Every morning I get a read out a report of students shot last night or yesterday. The good news is our shootings are down significantly. Keep in mind they never happen in the school. We work very hard to make sure they never happen in school. It's typically after hours, like 11 o'clock and later. But when it does happen, we have a citywide crisis support team. This team reports to me. These are licensed clinicians, and they are there to respond to incidents and be proactive. So the type of things that they see, when we have a shooting, you know, kids will grieve. They lost their friend. It's very traumatic. We will go to the school and we'll provide grief counseling, and that's as long as we need to. Not a one-hit wonder. We don't go in, oh, okay, you know, your one day is up. See you in that, you know. No, we will go in as many days, and sometimes, depending on the extent of it, we'll stay there for 5 days, 2 weeks, whatever it takes to make sure we worked it out. When there's a suicide ideation, we have a hotline that's 24/7. If a teacher, a parent, a friend suspects that their friend is thinking about suicide, we have a protocol that we mobilize to address that. Same thing with homicidal ideation. I tell you about the one this morning. Unfortunately, those are very common for us here in Chicago, and so we're very busy. It happens a lot during the holidays. Christmas Eve, I tell my family, I probably have like 2 or 3 cases on Christmas Eve. The homicidal ideation, too. I mean, just people feel very isolated, and they, you know, they do what they do. They get online and they start posting things to cry out for help. And then incidents where administrators or school clinicians determine the need for additional assistance. We had a real interesting case the other day where a teacher at a very high-performing high school, Blue Ribbon High School, Blue Ribbon from the Department of Education, a student graduated last year, very intelligent child, graduated, so he's gone. But out of the blue, started emailing his teacher, his favorite teacher, and just like, hey, just checking in, turned into, hey, I'm having, you know, some thoughts. I want to, you know, he wasn't blatant about it. And those are the ones you really worry about. When they don't outright say, I'm going to do this, they start talking cryptically. Lots of references to, I'm going to make a big bang. You know, you'll hear when, you know, when the shots ring out, like just weird things like that. And then it culminated at midnight where he sent a manifesto. Now the teacher calls me on my cell. Again, just, you know, I don't know where else to turn. We immediately mobilize. That child was screaming for help. And the mother's reaction was not helpful. Let me just tell you, the mother's reaction was like, what did you do now? And the child was paralyzed. He couldn't even talk. He couldn't communicate anymore. And the mother was just yelling at him. So they had to remove the mother from the scene so they could deal with what the child was going through. On average, this team receives 160 calls a month. That's a lot of calls. I have a very small team. We have a very small budget. But they make it work because they work around the clock. BAM, Becoming a Man, is a great program. We get grants to fund this. Essentially, our key partners here is Youth Guidance, which is a non-for-profit, Chicago Department of Family Supports and Services, and the University of Chicago Crime Lab. We work very closely with our academic partners at the universities in Chicago. And essentially, it's a combination of mentoring, group counseling, and sports. And so sports is the hook to get the students involved, but then also the mentoring is a weekly thing and group counseling. One thing that they learned, and I thought this was really interesting, you know, a lot of the mentors that we encounter, I mean, they just sit down with the student, they're like, you know, if the student's feeling all angry and like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, get even at blah, 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 you know, instinctively it's like, oh, you know, no, you don't want to do that, you know, you try to de-escalate the person. What BAM counselors learned is that talking the student out of it is not necessarily the most effective way. The most effective way is to, kind of like a mind trick, I guess, but delaying the decision. So, man, now is not the right time. And so just wait a minute. And in fact, you're having the person go through a cool down period, and then they come to the conclusion themselves. And the adult version of that is, how many of y'all type up an email that you're so angry? And then you're like, let me put it into the draft bucket. And then you wait till the next morning before you send it, right? It's a good idea. Same thing with children, adults. And so as a result, what they showed is the participants showed a 44% decrease in violent crime arrests during their participation. And the likelihood of, it says attending a school inside of a juvenile justice, the likelihood of you getting arrested is what that means, is reduced by 53%. So it's a successful program. I'm on their advisory council. I'm their biggest fan. If we can get this for every child in the entire city, it would be a great thing. And by the way, it's very cost efficient. So I don't have the stats on how much it costs to incarcerate a child. I don't have that off the top of my head. But that program is like $10,000 annually for a child. And the payouts continue. So you don't, you know, you do it 1 year and the benefits continue. It sticks with the child because it's cognitive behavioral therapy curriculum. One Summer Chicago Plus jobs program. We partner with Chicago Department of Family Supports and Services. Again, our mayor is big on youth employment. What we do with the Plus means we also give the students mentoring, CBT, and a full-time job. And so what we do is, our partnership in that is, we actually have my security officers who have the relationships with the students. They go around the city and they just say hi to the kids in the summer. And it's just a real nice connection. And because they don't see us as, you know, the authority, the disciplinary, if they see us as support, it just helps cement the whole experience for them, and the students love it. And so, like, we had one program where the summer job was urban, like, green jobs, and so the students learned how to do bike repair. And so when my security officers showed up to say hi, the kids actually had a bike waiting for each of them. And they're like, ride bikes with us around the area. So they all, like, we have photos of my big security officers riding bikes with the students around the city. Participants were 51% less likely to be arrested for violent crime in the out years after this program. I think I'm almost on the last one. So we've seen all these things in the country around just conflicts between law enforcement and the community. And so one of the things we're trying to do proactively is getting the youth started with building relationships with law enforcement, and vice versa, let me be clear. So the law enforcement has to learn how to build relationships with our youth. And so what we've done is we've brought together police officers and youth into the classroom. I mean, that's the easiest place for us, for the schools. And they sit there once a week for 12 weeks, and they do an interactive session, an abundance of role-playing on that experience. We've trained over 100 police officers This year we're going to be in 10 schools for the fall, and we're hoping to double that every semester. And the students start out in the beginning, they're just not interested. But by the end, that picture was taken on the last day, and that's just a small set of the kids that wanted to be in the picture. A lot of the students didn't want to be pictured. But we have like 15 kids in every class. So NOBLE, by the way, is the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement. I have to give them big props for developing this curriculum, because I was approached by others with a how to act curriculum. I just did not like the way that sounded. This is much more about understanding the law and your community and what your rights are. I love it. So what's next for us? Continued refinement of existing strategies, reviewing the relationships with CPD and our students. And by the way, our own CPS staff and our students is important. Build upon restorative practices in order to reduce youth violence and eliminate the school-to-prison pipelines. And when we get to questions, if anyone has any more ideas, we're always looking for them. So we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.